Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Please consider supporting Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
Hey, this is Nicole calling from Hamilton, and I needed to let everyone know that I really proudly support Vish and Creative Control. I have for many years, I will for many more, as long as he keeps delivering these amazing interview podcasts. When you hear one of Vish's interviews, you think he's known this guest for years, they're good friends, but the truth is he approaches every interview, whether it's sort of up-and-coming indie artists or established icons or like famous intimidating comedians with a really deep, genuine curiosity, so he's never met this person, and the same really warm candor, as though he's known them forever. I think it really lends to a great chat, no matter who he's talking to, and for that reason, I think you should throw Vish, like what, $1 a month? He's got jokes. The jokes make it worth it. Support Creative Control on Patreon.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today. I'm Vish's wife, and remember, when you name a dog Janet or Timothy, you are dragging humanity down just a little bit.
Jean Néant is a multidisciplinary musician and composer based in Montreal, Quebec. Working under the name Joni Void, Néant has made a name for himself as a conveyor of sampling, field recordings, and found sounds, which they orchestrate into textured, alluring, and occasionally even surreal songs and soundscapes. On May 26, 2023, Constellation Records presented Every Day is the Song, their third such release with the prolific Néant, and so Jean and I connected for a talk about things like their origins in France and interest in film studies, how open remix projects by the likes of Nine Inch Nails and Radiohead first piqued their interest in recontextualizing sounds and songs, how they use primitive and current technology to capture and conjure sounds, authenticity, verite and mediated culture, an interest in Tom Waits, and also distorting John Lennon and the Beatles, learning from bots on Twitter, making new music, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you, who follow and subscribe to this donor-driven podcast and spread the word about it, and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol. This is the primary source of good, honest revenue that I get for the podcast that I make. So if you're interested in contributing to that, please do at patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thank you so much. With additional support from Blackbird Music, a wonderful record store with bricks and mortar locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and very friendly personnel who will happily greet you as you come into the store and help you if you need anything. But also, you can go online to their website, blackbird.ca, and order things like the new Joni Void record, Every Day is the Song. It's just that simple. Go to blackbird.ca for more information. Plus, in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 788 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Jean Neon of Joni Void, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, Jean. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for asking. It's nice to speak with you. I don't believe we've ever encountered one another before.
No, this is our first introduction.
Yes, it's nice to have you on the show. Thank you for making time for me. Where in the world are you today?
I'm in Montreal, Quebec, at home.
Lovely. How are things going in Montreal for you today, this week? What's going on over
there? It's pretty eventful. We have the Suoni Peril Popolo Festival happening all of June. So I have my show for it that I'm co-presenting with my own event platform, Every Day I Go. And I'm performing with Sarah Paget as Page Vite. So I am going to meet her later and rehearse our set. So yeah, preparing myself for our first show. And then I have another one on July 7th, which is the album launch of this new album, Every Day is the Song. And it's also my 30th birthday party. And then 4 days after that, I'm heading to Japan. So yeah, and in May, I became a permanent resident. So yeah, it's pretty eventful. Lots of things happening, but in general, positive.
Well, congratulations. That's amazing. There's lots to celebrate there. You say you just became a permanent resident in May. Where are you from originally?
I'm from France originally, from the north of France. But you know, it's been 10 years. I live in Montreal, so it's my home. I spent 4 years as a student, and then 1 year was kind of, I guess, well, a bit of a sabbatical by choice, but then also trying to apply for work permits, and that didn't work. And it was like, okay, let's do permanent residency. I applied for that in 2019, and I spent 3 years, 6 months, and 15 days of pandemic of waiting just to get any update or anything whatsoever about this card. But here we are. It's finally arrived after all this time.
Yes. Well, yes, it has been a tumultuous time. Sorry, you came to Montreal for school, I gather. Is that
yes,
what you
said? Yes, I arrived late 2012, so 2013 was more my first year. But yeah, I did film studies at Université de Montréal.
Oh, cool. Film studies. That's cool.
Yeah.
I assume, you know, would it be wrong to assume you pursued music, or have you
it
had any sort of...
It was the intention at first, but I basically... I was aiming at a Concordia, but I was looking at the more traditional programs, which require more, you know, compositional, instrumental performances. I was unaware of a certain program called electroacoustics that would have been a bit more fitting for me. So yeah, I think in my mentality, I was like, oh, well, you know, what I'm really interested in is editing. Even, you know, video editing was still one of my interests. So I figured, yeah, it's if I joined film studies, it could kind of help with doing music and soundtracks and sound editing for films.
Oh, okay, well, interesting. So, sorry, did you kind of fall into film? Were you, like, into film as a kid? Like, as a young person?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was a big fan of Michel Gondry. I was I was watching films at the time, but I wasn't, no, I'm not, don't consider myself a film buff. I mean, it's more the theory world I have a problem with, basically. I'm like talking and writing about films. I like to just experience them and So, yeah, the film studies wasn't my initial choice. It wasn't like, oh, I'm made for this, but it felt like a logical one. And it's always that it comes back to with my music, that I feel like the way I make music is through a sound editing approach more than a compositional instrumental approach. So it sort of made sense, but it was also, yeah, a bit of a, I just finished high school and I need to do something after, and so I needed to do university. It wasn't really the most inspired choice. I'm not a big fan of academia, basically. I'll put it at
that. I see. Okay. So did you have any formal training in music?
No, this is where I'm kind of like, oh, the editing approach is it? I really just started self-taught, and basically more through a remixing approach at first, of kind of like samples and chopping up things, but then started more like composition, like having piano and writing my own lines in my track. So the more traditional music stuff came after, but no, I just started basically at 14 because I realized you can make music on a computer, and so it started from there.
Yeah. So exactly what do you suppose, if any, was there any artist or any experience you had that drew you to that notion of collage and editing as a artistic expression?
Well, the more formal one, the more the just like, that's logically where it started. Nine Inch Nails basically had this website, remixnin.com, where they just gave away multitracks to their songs. You could just join the website and download all these multitracks that you could open on GarageBand and Logic. And that's, yeah, really what initiated me making tracks, which is like, oh wow, I can just download this song and then make a version without the drums, or just rearrange stuff, like have this vocal line repeat. So I sort of learned music software just through these, like, Radiohead also at the time did a remix contest, so multi-tracks, and then I had friends who were doing mashups, so that, you know, was kind of like, oh, you try and find a certain, like, melody line, you get the loop, and then you try and add a drum break to it, and just have. So, but then I think clearly, speaking of remixes, I feel like also, yes, I was a big fan of Radiohead and Nine Inch Nails, and they had a lot of remixes. And through Radiohead, well, more like Thom Yorke, I discovered Burial and Fortet, and those are clearly two early influences. And I'm like, most of the ways I make so-called electronic music could be related to them. The more collage, like sample aspect, I feel like kind of came later with the books. So, yeah, if I really have to state, like, early influences, the really, like, my way of making music I owe to these artists, it's artists like, yeah, Burial, Fortet, The Books, Colleen. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, given what you know now and your experiences as a remix artist, as someone who builds these sonic landscapes, what do you suppose possessed bands like Radiohead and Nine Inch Nails to offer this opportunity to their fans and to musicians to be like, hey, here's all our stuff, go nuts, just have a go at it, try to create something? Do you have any perspective on why they thought that would be a good idea? Rather, I mean, on some level it's fan engagement, it's musician engagement, but
I feel like it's also the glory days of the internet, like, it wasn't, you know, it hadn't been completely taken over by corporations and Facebook, and there's just this, like, creative overload of just like, oh, like, you know, these platforms that you can just upload, like, sounds and just share music with people. And yeah, Radiohead were clearly experimenting. They kind of were the first to test I don't know if they're the first, but on record, like, kind of giving away a record for free when you're on that level of success. So, you know, it's kind of this experimental, like, oh, you know, let's try this, let's give this to our fans. Even, like, Nine Inch Nails, it was the whole, like, oh, I produced Saul Williams, you can, like, either get the album for free or you can, like, pay this much. And so, yeah, there was these experiments because there's still, I feel like, this playground that it wasn't completely, like, taken over by, I don't know, copyright infringement and, you know, streaming platforms and all these, like, labels and corporations owning everything. So, yeah, it's the glory days of the internet, and it's clearly, like, I owe it to that I make music. It was never, like, something that I wanted to make music. It's just like, wow, you can have GarageBand on the computer, that just, you have basically a music studio on a random formal, like, computer that most people have in their homes, And yeah, there's these artists that just, well, these, you know, things online that just like, you can download these sounds, you can download sample packs, you can just create and upload it online, have a SoundCloud account and share with people. And I just, you know, fell naturally in that with, just because it was fun and creative, and somehow it just became my whole life.
Yeah. Well, it seems to me that maybe their inkling, anyway, who's to say? They're not here. I can't ask them.
Your interpretation of it, yeah.
Well, but perhaps there's something to the fact that they kind of thought, well, music isn't any one thing. By giving people the freedom to do whatever they want with our stems or whatever, we can sort of demonstrate this. Like, whatever someone's creative impulse is, that's sort of something that's worth that can be worth exploring. I feel like there's a bit of that aesthetic in the work you've done, of like, music isn't any one thing. Sound isn't any one thing. It can be all sorts of things. Does that resonate with you?
No, of course. I always want to refer to, you know, the fact that, I don't know, it's sort of meta, like music about music, that this is a sound form, like this is a sound wave that I'm like sliding into my project and doing things with. So, but then that sound wave is also something I recorded personally on the Walkman. So yeah, definitely I try to put in the press release the tangible and intangible forms of music. Yeah. That is these ways that just music escapes us. No, it's such a bizarre way. We can't see it, but we can witness, like, it's not physically apparent, but then also just it's so omnipresent in our lives. And yeah, it's a funny waveform, art form to reflect on. Even in cinema, you know, how much sound is present, but it's not like an actor or like cinematography that you see it, you have to experience it in real time. And yeah, so yeah, I get your point. I mean, even, you know, both artists mentioned clearly, even before they did these experiments, they had a lot of remixes on their own, like singles or like album compilations. So it's clearly they were already interested in, like, okay, you make a song, but then you get another artist to have these parts of the song you made and to make something completely new. And yeah, I was definitely like, it really surprised me how much I had these like remixes where it's like, oh, you really need the original and the remix together, because the remix is incredible, but you need to listen to the original to know where the source comes from and what they're actually manipulating and kind of rearranging in this new remix. So yeah, there's definitely like already this culture of like, this is what I make, but there's always this source, there's always a sample, or this like, it's a remix of this, or it's a field recording of this, or it's a set that this experience or this moment or event that's ingrained in my own music.
Yeah. You know, you invoked the internet earlier as maybe, you know, something that those two artists and yourself maybe were interested in exploring, like the outer limits, what's possible with this new thing. And I also think those two artists and yourself seem to have an interest in how technology intersects with expression. Computers, robots, a field recorder, a tape recorder. These are all things that we use to capture and create things, but they also have their own kind of influence on the way something ends up sounding, you know. So if you take a digital, well, I guess what I'm getting at is, say you're on a bus or you're in a crowd and you want to capture that ambiance. Well, if you had a tape recorder, like from, you know, an analog tape recorder, and you recorded that sound, and you had a digital, you know, whatever, in my day, it would have been a mini disc player or something, and you put microphones up. When you listen back to both those things, they would sound different. They would actually sound, the fidelity would be different. And I remember when I was in high school, that's when Nine Inch Nails kind of really broke through. And I think those of us who were into heavier rock music but hadn't yet dug into whatever industrial music was were kind of mystified by that band, because they clearly were using drum machines and synthetic sounds to create rock music, which at the time, again, as you do a deeper dive into where that music maybe came from or what influenced him, Trent Reznor, you would see like, oh, he's drawing from other people who are trying to use technology in an edgier way, I suppose. And I think Radiohead did that too. And I think you do that too. So I guess where I'm coming from is, how do you view the relationship between what you're using to create what you end up making and the actual soul of it, if I may? I know that sounds a bit, whatever, reductive, but you know what I'm getting at there? Like, you're using all this gear to make your stuff, and that's obvious to me, but do you think it's also, just by using it, are you commenting on the technology itself, you know, the way you sort of suggest that maybe that's what those two artists were doing in the glory days of the internet or the early days of the internet? Like, what's possible? Do you think you're doing that on some level when you get a new piece of gear and you go out into the world or you try to capture some expression?
In the case of this album and the tape experiment, if I have to honestly say, it wasn't really a preconceived idea and more just a formal, practical aspect that basically, you know, a Zoom recorder, if you try to switch it on, it takes a little while, it's like loading, and most of the time what happens is the sound I'm trying to capture is already passed by. Yeah. It was just, this random Walkman that I just bought at the beginning of 2020, that it was like, oh wow, you can just record straight to it. And yes, as you said, there's this whole, definitely an aspect of this Walkman is that, wow, you get this, it's magnetic tape, so it's already like a record, it's not data, it's like pure sound waves recording straight to magnetic tape. But then it's just this aspect that it's like, I can just press record straight away and then stop, and you know, there's no loading, there's no processing files. And I think that was mostly where this sounded like, oh my god, I'm just gonna bring it with me everywhere and just see what it picks up. Because that also, definitely the way it picks up sound is sort of this like compressed, like once it gets something, it's really apparent, but then more ambient sounds kind of get lost. But also, it's really interesting sometimes actually what comes out of it. I guess also the batteries, if you like don't have the batteries are low, then the fidelity of the recording is like less, but then that gives experiments. So yeah, it wasn't really like, oh, you know, I need to experiment with tape and this is my moment. But that was kind of the irony also of making this album, is that I've always been associated to, you know, bedroom artists and like lo-fi tape, kind of those scenes. A lot of my friends and a lot of artists I really am inspired and collaborate with are really about the tape format, but it actually hasn't been part of my music except for sampling maybe, you know, Daniel Johnson or stuff like that who record to tape. But this was my first time really like playing with this format and even being able to play all these tapes that I've been given for years, like at shows, and you know, I bought myself, but I didn't actually have anything to play them on. So, no, definitely in the case of this album, the whole experiencing life through tape and this montage was not the intention at first. It just somehow came into my life, and I just kept recording, and songs came together from that, and added to then also, I was definitely kind of going through my own music library and listening to a lot of vinyls and tapes and so collecting samples. And yeah, those two scenes kind of just came together to make whatever this album is.
Yeah, no, and I can appreciate that. And I hope I wasn't too heavy handed in the question, but I'll try to simplify.
I understand where you're getting at, but definitely, it, you know, maybe Mise en Abîme, there was a bit more of a intention of like, oh, you know, I want to get different technologies and very referential about that aspect. But no, on this new one, the tape was totally this accident basically.
Yeah, like, and I appreciate what you're talking about in terms of the way of capturing the sound of what you're going to using technology. What about technology and sort of in general, are you fascinated by robots? We are, as we're speaking, there's already debates bubbling up about AI. What does it mean? What is it going to do? ChatGPT, all these sort of automated ideas. I mean, I asked this question for a few different reasons. One, because when I listen to your music, I can feel a little bit like that's why I asked that long question. It's like I feel a little bit of technology in what you're doing, obviously, in terms of how you're manipulating things and how you generate your music, I suppose. But what about the actual title of this album, Every Day is the Song? Where does that come from?
So the title comes from Twitter. It comes from a Twitter bot.
A bot?
Yeah, a bot. It's this account called StrawberryLetter723. I don't know, some like other random person I was following was like, this is my favorite bot, and I ended up on it. And yeah, from what I gathered, someone who just made a bot that takes his own tweets, his personal ones, but then just rearranges them, and it gets these like super bizarre results. But some of the lines, sometimes I'm like, wow, this is actually super poetic.
Right.
So yeah, and that's it. This line came up on May 5th of all days that said, every day is a song. And it just, it really stuck with me. And I was like, that's such a good song title. So,
so that's a bot. That's a bot. And then you also, I believe, had your own venture called Every Day Ago. Where did that come from?
Every Day Ago is also Twitter related and translation related. It's my friend Kazuki Koga. One night we're just having fun translating his Twitter that's all in Japanese into English, mm-hmm. and just looking at the bizarre broken results that came out of it. And there was one tweet, he was talking about how he was hearing his neighbors argue, and it made him really depressed every day that he was hearing that. And the translation, it was like, I am being sad every day ago. And I was like, whoa.
Right.
every day ago. Like, it just, there is, like, this is, it's past and future. Like, it's, you have all, well, you have all the days, but it's like, that have been past. So, yeah, I just, once again, this result that stuck with me. Relating to technology.
I hope I haven't asked too leading a question, but there, you do seem to be interested in what robots can make on some level, what the machines can create on their own with your, or rather, sorry, in almost a collaborative way, I suppose, with humans.
This is interesting. It's actually, I kind of appreciate you because it's kicking my ass right now. Just like, I want to, no, my instinct is I want to be like, no, I'm a punk and no, like, fuck AI and fuck this. And like, but then I think deeply about it. I'm like, no, this key, obviously, if you listen to my music, yeah, there's an element. I think what I'm interested in is just creative tools, which technology is part of. And this is it. I'm really interested in, you know, translating. Like, you go on a translator, you put your lyrics, you translate them into, like, 30 languages back and forth, and you use whatever result you get at the end. Which, for me, you mm-hmm. know, that's, like, same creative practice of doing cut-ups, of, like, oh, you write lyrics, and then you cut up the words, and then you mix them around in a bowl, and you take whatever. It's, technology is involved, but, like, this is it. Even with this whole AI debate and all that, what I mostly say to people is like, the only thing I care about AI is the funny videos that come out of it. And just, like, that's creative. It's not, you know, not stealing material and all that. It's just, it's like Donald Trump playing a video game and it's like his voice and it's really funny because it's so fitting.
Yeah.
That's more the stuff I'm interested in. Like, oh, like the really deep, like, what is this gonna, like, do for humanity and the theory and academia. Yeah, my brain just switches off when it becomes like too theory based. So I think that's it. I'm like, I'm a kid. So, you know, it's like, if the video game is fun or something like that, then yeah, I get obsessed with it. You know, even on my album, it's funny. Another technology thing I reference in the title track, which I'm like, I don't know how many people will get that this is a video game reference. There's a track called Vortex Any Percent Speedrun. Mm-hmm. Which is a reference to video game speedruns, which is, you know, even video game for me is a funny aspect. It's like, well, I play games, like I have a Switch and there's definitely games that I've like played obsessively and have like plenty of hours. But then, you know, there's this whole other video game culture, people who like speedrun games and they like, they know the game so well that they try to finish it as fast as they can. And it's these like communities and competition. And I can't, my mind can't process getting that good at a game that you can just run through it as, like, and you're competing with other people who are beating you for like two seconds, the split second get before you. Yeah, you know, it's stuff like that where like, I like video games, so then actually understanding what goes into them, like the way, if you're a gamer now, the way you understand games is like such on another level. So I don't know if that's a response to your question, but yeah.
No, I see it in my son who plays pretty advanced, for me anyway, they seem like pretty advanced video games and they're quite interactive and you have to build things. I guess what I'm getting at is for the better part of the last 40 years, We have been engaging with technology since the popularization of the home computers and whatnot. And then the logical conclusion is certainly throughout most of this century, we have been kind of algorithmically controlled. We have been using platforms that are ostensibly robots and sort of show us what they want to show us based on our habits and whatnot. So when I listen to your music, I am reminded of that kind of bizarre technological and industrial landscape that we're in. Does that make... like, it feels like we are very machine-oriented, and the way your album hums and hisses, it takes me back to sort of summer jobs I've had in factories or plants or things like that. Just that strange kind of ambience, if you will, where it's like hissing and... just like a feeling, like a pulsating almost feeling. So I guess what I'm saying is your record kind of reminds me of this, but it also feels in line with the sort of dystopian science fiction about the future that we encounter sometimes. So I feel like you are both in the present and the future, the same way Every Day Ago, for example, is in the present. And the past. Anyway, it's very confusing temporarily. so I guess what I'm saying is you seem to be an artist who is in some sort of bizarre temporal intersection of where we're at with how we interact with technology. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's not really that I'm trying to be like, oh, you know, we doom, technology is everywhere. But I definitely, for me, it's important to just acknowledge the presence of technology in your life, and just, you know, it's like, you know, people who criticize like, oh, films now where they show people on their smartphones or stuff like that, or it's like, why wouldn't you show that? It's part of our lives now. It's like a crucial, like everyone has it. There's not like, oh, well, you can only show the cool old phones from the past. Now it's like,
yeah,
I definitely, the like being in between times is definitely an aspect of my music, and I feel even me as a person, because you know, I'm about to turn 30 this year, so I'm born in 93, and it's, yep, just, it's such, I'm very, how to say, fascinated with my generation, of how we're like, well, we're kind of the one generation that, you know, I don't know if it's like millennial zoomers or whatever, I'm talking like this, yeah, 10 year range, kind of like 90 to like 98.
Mm-hmm.
I was, mm-hmm, like, we lived when there was the before internet and the after internet, the kind of like,
yes,
internet just,
absolutely,
completely taking over, yeah, our lives. And I'm definitely, I'm a product of that, of kind of just this unlimited access to internet that it's just like, oh, well, you know, I got really into lo-fi music and that was with tape. But then also this, like, I don't know, more electronic, like Japanese noise and, you know, Ryuji Kida or something like that. It's all this like static and glitch and... So for me, there's just, oh, there's all these mediums you can make sound with, and some of them are these really, like, old school, like, technologies and samplers and drum machines and all that, and then you have the more, like, wow, you can do this on a computer, and you can get these crazy, like, results by, like, using plugins, or... So, there's definitely the kind of, yeah, in-between, like, you know, tape, this is it, the what you're mentioning of, like, oh, it... Just the tape texture for you takes you back to like, well, this was the medium you would record everyday life, yeah, on, and now it's like phones. But then I'm like using, you know, the recordings in the album are from 2020. It's not like old, but still, that for you, it has this like, oh, it feels like the past. Whereas for me, it's kind of the opposite, where it's like, well, for me, this Walkman recording is new technically.
And well,
for me, there's like, yeah, you know, there's a whole generation of kids now that if they listen to my album, probably the tape texture doesn't mean anything to them because it's not a medium they really experience. So it's just lo-fi kind of hissing and all that for them must be like, whoa, what is this?
Well, some might assume that you're taking a clean recording and making it messy and distorted.
It's true. Then that's it. There's a whole generation of kids who also, they want the vinyl and tape texture, but they added like artificially. I definitely did that as Johnny Ripper. As Johnny Ripper, I would even... because I didn't have a real piano, but I was really obsessed with this, like, detuned, like, old, creaky, like, piano sound that, you know, I was hearing from, like, Tom Waits and John Byrne and other artists I was really influenced by. So I would, yeah, literally just go and, like, get recordings of people playing piano and just try and get the like ambient sounds and the creakings and not the notes and just add that to my like piano lines, because I couldn't record on a old creaky piano myself, but I wanted that sound. Now, obviously, yeah. I know so many studios where I could go and like play on a creaky piano and I wouldn't need to like artificially add that texture. So I don't know where I'm going with this, but yeah, that's definitely, no, that's it. I feel like, yeah, it comes down to like the imperfections of technology, basically. And it's like, oh, when you use that medium, you used to have this, or like you could get this whistle by like, you know, if you're interested in glitch, it's like, oh, well, how can you like mess up a, how can you circuit bend a toy to then get these like sounds? And so I feel like, yeah, that's really the approach I have. That it involves technology, but it doesn't entirely rely on technology. So it's like, how creative practices, how can you get an interesting texture out of this? How, like, when you get this accident, you get this result, and just, that's where I, you know, feel like in technology is interesting. I'm not really interested in this whole, like, are we gonna become robots, or robots gonna take over, like, AI. It's just use it as a tool to keep making creative shit, basically. Like, that's how I see it.
Yeah, I'm just looking at this bio that I was sent about the new album, and I just want to read a sentence out to you before I ask another question. It says here, songs are constructed from audio recordings made all over, and often while literally on the move, walking, cycling, and skateboarding around the city, in bus and train stations, from car windows. So that suggests to me that you are interested in verite, capture of some kind, you know, just whatever's going on. We were just talking about the way you cited a few artists who, when they present their works, for lack of a better term, it can sound a little creaky. It can sound a little junk shoppy. You know, Tom Waits has been quite famous for this. You know, like there's clearly, you know, stemming from Captain Beefheart and whatnot, and maybe field recordings by blues artists. As well, I mean, trying to present music in a kind of creaky or makeshift manner, but in a purposeful way, I suppose, is what he's doing. What do you suppose for you is the connection between verite recording and also sending it out into the world to sound a little scrappy, if you will? Can you talk about those two things? Because like I said, depending on the gear you have, you could do that kind of field recording and it can sound really, really high fidelity. But you've chosen to not use such gear in every case, I think, is what I'm getting at. When you talk about using a Walkman that you bought at a record shop, it says here. So, sorry, can you talk about that? The conflation of both verite, so whatever is going to happen when I'm out on my skateboard, there's something interesting about that to me that I want to turn into music or send out into the world. But then also, it's going to sound a little distorted or fucked up on some level. What's the connection between, I guess I'm getting at authenticity. Why does everything in your world tend to be so hyper authentic on some level, but also sound a little strange?
I want to point out already, my cat just did a cameo, Muffin. You just heard that.
Oh, I can't see your cat.
Yeah.
Oh, so, hi. There we go. We got some cat verite happening, exactly. I guess, is what's going on. Yes, yes, yes. Sorry, was that too convoluted a question?
No. It's great. I love both. It's just, yeah, they're separate for me. So Tom Waits, I definitely want to point out, yeah, it really got me. I was a huge Tom Waits fan when I was living in France before I moved to Montreal. And then basically moving to Montreal, I completely stopped listening to his music. Not intentionally, just, you know, kind of just moved on and listened to other things. And I actually, recently, a friend of mine took me to a tribute show of his, and he's like, oh, you know, I know that you really, like, are a fan of Tom Waits, but then I was like, oh, I need to kind of re-listen to his music and get back into it before I see this tribute show. Mm-hmm. But I was almost like, oh, you know, it's been 10 years or so, like, will I still appreciate his music? And I actually was surprised, and one aspect that really got me, basically, this time, kind of having more musical knowledge than what I had 10 years ago, was how beautifully composed his songs are. Like, just the composition and the way, like, the instrumentation, arrangements, orchestration is so beautiful, but then he makes it ugly intentionally. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it work. And that was kind of my issue at the tribute show, is that people were like doing the songs, but in a beautiful way, and like, oh, I'm singing with my beautiful voice, and everything's played like super on time. Mm-hmm. And it really made me realize, like, wow, yeah, the greatest aspect of Tom Waits is he will write beautiful songs and make them ugly intentionally and just have them played like, yeah, it's a drunk in a bar who's like mm-hmm. messing up this song, but it's like, that's the way you play that song. It's made to be played like that. It's not made to be played proper. And so, yeah, I've always had a problem with Tom Waits' cover, because I'm like, you're not getting the character aspect that's so crucial.
Yeah.
How it relates to Verité. So there's kind of two aspects about that whole in motion element. Let's see if I can reattach it to the little Tom Waits tangent. But the definitely documentary, it has been a very I definitely feel like I shit a lot on film studies, but the one class I'm like, oh, that was, I needed that. It really changed like my way of processing consciousness and reality and like film, was the documentary class. Because, you know, before that class, if you would have asked me about documentary, I would have said, oh, Michael Moore or something. I would have been very basic. And sure. Just having that class, it just explains that, like, no, it's all these like directors, you know, like Chris Marker, who was like a big influence for me. Like, the moment I switch on the camera, this is not reality anymore. It's framed, I'm editing it, you know, I'm choosing what I want to show. You can't show it as like objective reality. It's like, from the moment you're making this film, it's subjective decisions and subjective engagement that makes these films happen. And so the whole documentary aspect of like, well, I want to have this concept, but I don't know what's going to happen out of it, and I'm just there to capture what I can. But then there's this whole subjective process that comes from like, well, then how do I represent it? How, from like capturing all this material, do I edit it in a way that makes sense and takes form? But definitely the kind of having always on the move aspect in the album was also really inspired by the fact that making music on a computer, you're like static most of the time. You're just, you know, so yeah. much dance music is made by people actually sitting down in a studio. Yeah. So definitely with this album, I was interested in motion and like time and speed. And because already with the samples, like, well, you know, it's samples in 45 RPM, suddenly turned into 33, which is like, it's the same sample, but just with a different setting on the turntable. Mm-hmm. So that's it. There was then this aspect with the Walkman that's like, I'm physically on the move with this. Literally, the name is a Walkman, and I'm a man walking with it. And yeah, I just really wanted to have this aspect in the album that it just felt like transportation, basically. That, oh, you're in a train suddenly, and then you're on a bike, and then you're just walking, and then this car just drives past you, and then in the next sample, you're actually in the car. So yeah, there's definitely a documentary aspect about the album.
And I think where I'm landing with what we're discussing is that it occurs to me that no matter how something is captured sonically or visually, if it's captured by a piece of gear, then that moment is not that real anymore. Mm. It is mediated.
Mm.
It is not real. So even if, so what I'm getting at is, whether you're using a Walkman and analog tape to capture something, or something like a Zoom recorder, or like a cleaner digital interface, when you play it back, either way, it's sort of real, but not.
Mm.
It is. So I feel like swimming in everything you were just saying is like, yeah, real. This was a record, and it was meant to be played at 33 RPM, and I've distorted it by altering its speed to 45, or vice versa. I mean, that's kind of where we're at with everything that we use. When I look at my record collection to my left here, this is all mediated reality. And I think maybe this has been true for a long, long time. But for some reason, your record and your music just has sparked these thoughts in me more. As I think about the way you practice and how you practice, I'm like, wait a minute, almost nothing is real. I just paraphrased John Lennon there, and I'm going to ask you about John Lennon in a moment. Because he appears in his Beatles incarnation on your record. But Is that maybe nothing is real? Is that a phrase that resonates with you in terms of your own practice? I know that's a heavy thing to lay on someone, but I'm landing on that here, and I feel like that might be a good way of capturing what you've created. It is real, but also is it? Is anything real? Like, that's maybe where I'm coming from with your aesthetic, particularly on this record. Does that make sense on any level?
It's funny, that phrase, I feel like I would probably associate more to Johnny Ripper, actually. It was more like the whole psychedelic, like, wow, life is a dream, and, you know, just nothing of this is real, and the whole episode laugh of...
It's from Strawberry, just so people who don't know the Beatles, it's from the song Strawberry Fields Forever, and... that's a composition by John Lennon and the Beatles, but he says nothing is real because, you know, that was the hazy drug-induced stupor he was in at the time. But yeah, I don't know why. I feel like your way of making verite music, but also manipulating it, makes me feel like it is a decent catch-all on some level.
That's really interesting, because, you know, for me, I kind of feel like a bit like the opposite of, like, the Johnny Ripper was the escape. It was really the, like, oh, the world of dreams and kind of this, like circus of reality. Whereas, like, obviously the new, like, Johnny Void material is more like, no, this is my subjective experience, but it's my subjective experience from the moment I capture it. It's like escaped me, and now it's yours. So that's it. Mm. The fact that you like relate to it on that level, well, it makes sense, because it's like that's your subjective experience of my music.
Yeah, but, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, one experience I really wanted to come across basically with this album, something that's really getting to me during pandemic was all the discourse about music, about like Spotify, streaming, what artists should be doing, like how they should create music, like all these like discussions online that just felt like it was going nowhere, and that I just had a hard time even like following or processing, because I'm someone that streaming is I said it in another podcast interview I had recently, where he asked me like how I was listening to music in an everyday basis, and I'm like, yeah, I feel like I listen to music, you know, on vinyl, on tape, on CD, I go to shows, I just enjoy hearing sounds. Streaming is the only, I don't have a Spotify account, I don't have Apple Music, I don't engage with streaming at all, and it's not to be Banksy or anything, but it's like, this is just not a way that makes sense for the way I consume music and how I make music from music, so...
Yeah.
So that's it. I feel like with this album, what I was really trying to come across, it's just like, sound is omnipresent. Is there, you know, I walk outside and there's like a car passing by with like this music that's blasting out of it. And yeah, I get this like Doppler effect from it. And that's super nice. I like hearing that. That's music, but I can't have that on Spotify. I can't be like, oh, play this Doppler effect car that just went past me.
Yeah. I that resonates with me. I mean, I listen on vinyl primarily these days, but I also listen a lot via my telephone and the computer, just because sometimes it's easier, and that's how I'm sent music in advance of a conversation or something. Sometimes I wonder what I will do if I ever stop, you know, doing this kind of work, where I'm not getting an album, you know, a month before it comes out, and then if I like it, then I will buy it myself, you know, like what that pattern might change at some point. But yeah, anyway, it is, yeah. I don't mean to question what you're doing exactly.
No. The questions are pertinent, but yeah, it's making me, you know, kind of double down on like, oh no, why I made this album. And yeah, it's definitely it's something that, you know, I haven't really had the chance to discuss, but definitely a big aspect of that album was just like, yeah, looking at all this discourse online and be like, who cares? Like, people just have such a different way and experience of music and sound. And, you know, even I feel like, because obviously most of my friends are artists and musicians and all that. And so when you talk about Spotify, it obviously, you know, it's like, oh, people should do this. And sometimes I need to explain to them to be like, they're not as passionate as music that we are. Like, some people just want it as a background thing to just have a mood when they're at home. And that's fine. It's like no one's saying that, you know, the problem is not how people consume it, is the platform itself and like how they're not like... being fair, but anyway, that's a whole kind of ones to get into. Well, but that was kind of the point of, you know, there's like all this like talk about like how music should be now and, you know, how AI is going to replace this and all that. And I'm like, there's a bunch of people out there who are still listening to their tapes who are completely disengaged with all of this, and their experience of sound and music is valid. Or it's just, yeah, that kind of just definitely verite aspect of like, it's whatever you say or whatever you think about music and sound, it's just, it's just oozing into our lives in ways that we don't have control of.
Well, I think everything happens so fast now that I think we don't remember we don't ponder the fact that every single technological advancement, particularly when it comes to the commodification of culture, leads people to be suspicious, afraid, or angry. So if you think on it, when the records first emerged, this was the capture of performances that people used to go see in person. Mm. Now, obviously, we weren't around then, but I guarantee you people are like, this is going to ruin music.
Mm.
This is going to ruin culture. You are commodifying and capturing a thing that is meant to be experienced in person. Then, eventually, hey, you can, you know, buy tapes. Not only is there vinyl, there's cassettes. I'm sure there was an outcry. Well, this is going to ruin culture. These aren't as good as records. CDs come along. Hey, sonically, they probably sound better. No, not as good as records. Not as good as tapes. Now we're at streaming. Hey, that's not as good as physical media. What are we doing? I think we just get in these cycles of where technology advances, back to the robots that started our conversation, right? Because I think we are always mingling with new technologies and how they affect our consumption and how they impact commodification. Because if I go back to my previous example, I'm sure that when vinyl records were introduced on the market and people were told, hey, you can actually buy the music you love and take it home with you and listen to it anytime you want, I'm sure live performers are like, what the fuck? My bread and butter is performing these songs in front of audiences, and now you're telling me that anyone can just do it at their own convenience? It's a very weird thing, man. I feel like I feel like everything that we do is meant to create a bit of convenience and create saleable products. But there's always an outcry about every single advancement. So we're in the thick of it right now in a bizarre cross-section temporally where people like you and me are like, vinyl records, the same things people were talking about 100 years ago. This thing is clearly going to outlive us all in terms of technology. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that vinyl records are going to outlast everything else. But right now we're in this weird thing where everything, the vinyl record, the CD, now cassettes are back, have been for some time, and streaming, and it just creates this fraction, like these fractions of like no one knows what to actually consume and how, because everyone's doing, like as a record label, I don't even know where you'd begin. Do we invest, which technology can we invest in? Can we afford to invest in every single medium? Do we really need to be doing that? It's very confusing. Sorry, that was a tangent.
No, but then a perspective that really helped me, I remember, I wish I could actually quote who this person was. I need to go back in time and find this article. But yeah, it was like an article that was going into like streaming. It was really, you know, when there was the whole Spotify controversy. And then there was just this person at the end who was like, I'm not really bothered. Like, it wasn't a positive or negative take. It was just, like, just take into perspective that, like, it hasn't even been 100 years that, yeah, music is on physical media. There's, like, what, like, shellac records, I guess, appeared in the 20s, 30s. Yeah. And it's, like, there was, you know, thousands of years of music being everywhere and being so important and crucial. But, yeah, you had to see the performance. You had to witness it in person or, like, just, yeah, the physical media is new. So, you know, there's obviously, you know, with vinyl, there's a whole, like, I'm like, will it really outlast everything? It is, you know, it is pollution. It is, like, PVC, you know, it is a format that I'm like, it doesn't really make sense. But then, you know, I can't be like, oh, well, then everything's digital. Yeah, digital is the way to go now. There's also, well, no, there's obviously a very crucial aspect that music needs to be physical. But then, so, Yeah, but getting back to like what the album is about, it kind of gets to this point of like, who cares? Even if there's no more, even say tomorrow like vinyl disappears, like some wizard just did a spell and there's no more, there's still ways to experience music. And I think
I agree.
This is it. The album is about that. Like, is if the world is spinning, the sound and the world is a vinyl in itself. That it's like as long as it's spinning, there's. And we're on it. There's just like sound emanated from it.
Yeah.
So I think that's it. That was the intention of this album. Like, yeah, when you start going into these rabbit holes of like considering like all the, which, you know, it's important. It's also for musicians. It's a, you know, professional way of life. It's like some of us make a living out of it. So no, it, you know, it's really important to talk about these things and try and aim for like better alternatives and all that. But I think at its core, Every Day is a Song is just about like, it's just, there's music all the time, there's sound all the time. It's as long as you're living every day, you're gonna hear sound. Unless you're deaf. But even like deaf people still experience sound in a way that we don't experience. Yeah. So yeah, still valid. Yeah.
For those who haven't seen it yet, the track listing of Every Day is the Song by Joni Void includes song titles like Tape, World is Spinning at 33 RPM, and a song called Disposable that I alluded to earlier in a way, because I believe, is that the song that I was referencing that includes an interpolation of the Beatles song Julia? Is that the one?
Yep.
Yeah. I want to ask you about that because I want to follow up on what I was saying earlier. This struck me. I'll confess to you that I was trying to do my every other day exercises. Every other day I exercise. I try to exercise. And sometimes I stick to it. And I was, sometimes I listen to music that's really, you know, beat oriented or hip hop, you know, just to keep my pace up or whatever. In this case, I'm like, I'm going to listen to Joni Void's album, Every Day is the Song, and see what that's like to work out to.
Interesting workout choice.
It was an interesting choice for me, but it also, sometimes when you're in that mode, I find I can actually concentrate on what someone's saying or playing.
Okay.
I've had revelations doing it where I'm like, oh, I missed that. So then I'm listening to that song and I'm like, wait a minute, there's a phrase there that I heard, because your voice is very distorted generally when it, that's your voice, right?
Nope.
The singing. Oh, it's not your voice?
Nope.
No. Okay. Whose voice is that?
This is Mei Mei. That's where the cover comes from. That's kind of my little, with sample clearing, is that the cover is this Chinese artist Mei Mei. It's a series of free tapes where it's basically Beatles covers for guitar feedback and voice.
Nice. Okay, so that one in particular stuck out to me because of the interpretation, like the lyrics that are chosen either by you or by Mei Mei. Tell me a little bit about that. Why did that those phrases from that song speak to you, and why did they make it onto that particular song, Disposable?
So this is the interesting story. It's my friend Julia Dick, who actually posted the original, well, the Mei Mei album, and I was like, whoa, this is really interesting, and I almost instantly bought the tape, and I was like, obviously I'm, you know, gonna sample this. This is such an interesting, like, just the voice and the feedback and these like kind of broken guitar chords. It's basically, it's a cover, but aside from the lyrics, there's nothing that is like the actual Beatles original it's covering. So yeah, I received the tape and I started working on this track and sampling this cover of Julia. What I didn't think about is that I have covered Julia as Johnny Whipper. It's on my album Still Images and Other Dreams, my second album as Johnny Whipper in 2012, and my friend George Pauline was singing on it. So yeah, it was kind of a reference also to Johnny Whipper. And the first song, Tape, is actually a beat from Johnny Whipper that I made in 2015. I never found a place for it. And that samples these guys called the Tape Beatles. So I'm like, there's these two like Johnny Whipper related tracks that then reference the Beatles, and I literally said earlier, now I'm thinking about it, I'm like, oh, nothing is real, that phrase of John Lennon actually resonates more with Johnny Ripper, and here we are, I'm like, yeah, those two Beatles references in the album are related to Johnny Ripper, so, yeah, it's sort of a meta-referential choice, and also just, I wanted to mess with people a bit, because I knew people would think, well, no, actually, you know, this is it, you're the third person who thinks it's me singing on it, which is really interesting. Because it's not. So I just thought people would think I'm sampling the original by the Beatles and I'm just doing this super weird treatment of it. But no, it's May May, which is released on this label called Zoom In Night. So I definitely recommend anyone who wants the most unexpected Beatles covers ever to check out May May's free tapes of Beatles covers.
It's really haunting on your record, so I want to check out the source material for sure. You've evoked Johnny Ripper a few times, and I kept meaning to ask you for my audience to maybe explain the distinction between Johnny Ripper and Joni Void. Is that possible for you to do that?
Of course, of course. Johnny Ripper is how I started music, basically. That was my, to bring back full circle, that was my username on the Nine Inch Nails forum. And it's actually, it's a song by the Blood Brothers, which is a band that sounds nothing at all like I've ever made musically. But yeah, and that's it. I was just starting to make music at the time with these like remixes and just learning to use GarageBand. And I just used my forum username, Johnny Ripper, as a moniker, and just figured I would change it whenever I was more serious about music. And so I did, I guess, 6 years of that. Like, first album came out 2011, so I kind of already had songs before that, but I really feel like that album, Soundtrack for a Film That Doesn't Exist, my debut is really, like, that's the beginning of Johnny Ripper. But then, yeah, I moved to Montreal, I do my film studies, and then I live in this DIY loft called The Plant. I start performing live, which is something I never intended to do as Johnny Ripper. I was really kind of like, oh, this is computer music, and I don't want people thinking I'm going to play piano on stage because that's not what I do. So that was another aspect of Johnny Ripper I forgot to mention. It was very soundtrack influenced. There's definitely some straight up influences that you can hear throughout the music. Jan Tiersen, John Bryan, Philip Glass. It was kind of very this piano, lo-fi sound, but then with this more like, I guess, beats and sometimes more electronic influence, sometimes more hip-hop. But then, yeah, I moved to The Plant, started performing live a lot, getting involved in these kind of like live music scenes, and then somehow learned that a label named Constellation Records were interested in potentially releasing my music. So yeah, around then, it's a lot of things. Also, Johnny Ripper, because of this like soundtrack aspect, I started feeling really pigeonholed. The people were always expecting these kind of like cute piano songs, and I was obviously interested in experimenting more with sound. So it just came to a point where it was like, okay, my sound is changing, my life also is very different from being this kind of like, I don't know, introverted bedroom producer that now I'm like actually involved with like live performances. So yeah, it kind of came to a point where I'm just like, I'm working on this new album that became Selfless, and it's like, this doesn't feel like Johnny Ripper anymore. This is definitely So it just made sense. So like with this new album and the signing with the label and everything that was going on at the time, to change my name to Johnny Void, which
I see. Well, listen, I find you to be a very fascinating person, fascinating artist, and I just want to say I appreciate this insight into you and your work and this wonderful album. You alluded earlier to some things that were coming up for you. It sounds like it's going to be a very busy summer for you, but is there anything else that you want to mention in terms of future plans that you'd like people to know about?
I guess I can point out that I pretty much already have the sequel finished. Well, not finished, but it's 80% done.
Oh, so cool.
Because, the thing about Every Day as a Song is that it's really my time capsule of 2020 and 2021. I was going to self-release it on tape originally. This is kind of the irony I love telling people, is that the intention for that album was to be a self-release tape. And then in 2022, I was like, oh, you know, maybe makes more sense to release it with Constellation. So now the album exists on vinyl and CD, but not tape.
Right.
So, right. But yeah, so that's it. But then even in 2022, because I was confirming this album with Constellation and, you know, the time to put everything in place and have the release date, I was already starting to work on this new album that is much more song-based, much more like beat-centric. It's less, you know, there's not as much like, oh, I'm using like tape recordings everywhere, but it's still very much about like motion and these, yeah, kind of overlapping sounds, kind of more like personal field recording jam things over than manipulated samples and all that. But it's much more, yeah, kind of, I don't know, animated and colorful and very
cool
song. So yeah, I don't want to reveal the title. I was like, I kind of wanted to, but I'm like, it's still subject to change. So, that's in the works and plenty of other projects. There's basically never a month when I'm not like working on something.
No, that's fantastic. And I assume, one place people can go to learn more about you and your work is, I believe CSTRecords.com, the Constellation site. Is there anywhere else people can go, to learn more about, Joni Void?
I have my own Instagram and I have my own Bandcamp. Two Bandcamps actually. I have Every Day I Go, which is kind of my platform label, which has collaborations or not on Constellation. But then, yeah, there's my own page, JoniVoid.bandcamp.com, and then Joni Void on Instagram also, that works.
Okay. No, do you pronounce it Joni or Johnny?
Joni.
Joni, yeah, like Joni Mitchell? Okay, yeah. I just want to make sure I got this right. I don't want to mispronounce. It looks like Joni.
It's, yeah. Joni. It's the story is, I was going to go with John Void at first, but then everybody thought it was a reference to John Voight, and I absolutely didn't.
Oh, right.
So then, yeah, I was like, oh, do I do Johnny Void, you know, kind of. But then it's like, oh, that's too much like Johnny Ripper again. And yeah. I have my friend, Joni Sadler.
Yes.
Rest in peace. Yeah. Beloved friend who, I just randomly asked her if she would find it weird that I just have J-O-N-I as a new moniker. And no, she's totally into it. And she's like, it's fine. And surprisingly ended up being the secretary of Constellation, I think, 2 years after that. So it's kind of funny, yeah. This confusion of like, well, there's Johnny the artist and Johnny the secretary, the PR person.
Yeah, I knew Joni as well, so we all miss her very much. Mm. And I appreciate that it became an inadvertent tribute to her, the naming of your project. So that's cool. Okay, well, listen, I appreciate all of the information you've provided us and some insights. I hope it wasn't too convoluted from my end of things. I know there were some big ideas and topics.
I hope you enjoyed my rambling.
Likewise, I hope you enjoyed mine. I want to go out on a song, if possible, from this release for people to hear. And if that is possible, can you choose one for us and maybe talk about why it came to mind?
Oof, one from the album. Post-credit scene, I feel like it encapsulates a bit everything about the album. It's just, you know, there's a beat, there's Walkman recordings, and the mood, yeah, is a bit more uplifting. That's probably the one that I'm like, it's, yeah, a good single.
So post-credit
and also
scene
it's
is...
the point of that song is kind of referring to there's going to be more after this album. It's a post-credit scene, which usually that implies that a sequel is coming.
I was going to ask about this. So it's the final song on this album. Does it seem to you to be a harbinger of what you're working on right now for the follow-up?
Maybe in the sense that, yeah, it's a nice hip-hop beat with a nice bass line. Yeah, that's kind of what the second album is about also.
Well, let's hear it now. This is Post-Credit Scene from Every Day is the Song by Joni Void. Jean, this was a pleasure for me, as I say. I hope you enjoyed it. And, I hope we speak again soon. And best of luck in the future.
Anytime.
Thank you. Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Ah, nice conversation there with Jean. That was fun. Thank you again to Jean for being on this show to talk about Joni Void. For those of you listening and aren't Jean, because I thank Jean specifically, thank you for listening to this, the 788th episode of Creative Control. Can you believe it? They never told me I'd get past 785. Those fools. Here we are at 788. Goddamn thing won't stop. Yeah, 788th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcasts. Now, if you can't find one of those 788 episodes, or I guess you're already at, you know what I mean, the other 787, you can't find one of them that you're looking for and you don't know where it is, your podcast service is like, no, we only go back so far. We can't keep up with Vish and his prolific podcast. Something's wrong with that guy. First of all, that's a lot of extraneous information from your podcast platform. I don't see why it's disparaging me in particular. I've done nothing to it. If you can't find an episode of the show that you're looking for, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkhanna.com. You can currently like Creative Control on Facebook or follow the show on Twitter at vishcreative, or you can follow me directly on Twitter at vishkhanna. And I'm on Instagram as well, at vishkhanna. And I'm on Blue Sky and Threads. I feel like every time I do one of these outros, there's a new social media thing that I seem to be on. I don't know what to say, but I'm on all those things generally as Vish Khanna, so try to find me there. Most importantly for me, if you can go to patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to support this donor-driven podcast, I would greatly appreciate it. $6 American or more a month grants you access to exclusive stuff. You get the episodes earlier than everybody else. I put bonus material up in there. And if you're interested in receiving a Creative Control t-shirt, just message me on Patreon and I'll get you one while supplies last. So thank you. Also, thanks again to the fine Alberta record retailer Blackbird Music, which you can learn more about and order records directly from this website of theirs, blackbird.ca.
Also want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. Go visit those places and tell them I sent you. Just to say it, I don't think you get a discount or anything. I haven't figured that part out. Anyway, just go and support those places. Also, thanks to Jim Guthrie for letting me use music of his on the show. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. Guarantee you that guy's not giving you a discount if you mention my name. And finally, thank you for listening to this episode with Jean. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you consider subscribing to this podcast or following it and telling your friends all about it, and maybe they'll learn something about me and the show that they like, and they'll help spread the word about it too. So thank you for all those things. I must leave you now, but I will talk to you very soon. Bye for now.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work. Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.